What's up, squad? Today we have a special guest, my dear friend, brother, Kyle Novak, assistant coach for Washington Huskies softball, recruiting coordinator, kind of?
Yeah, in a way, we all do it, I guess.
Okay, I know a great hitting coach can teach the swing, but anybody, baseball, softball, could teach the catchers, teach outfield, just an all-around good dude, and kind of the team's kind of mindset specialist as well. You're kind of carrying a lot of hats, but what's up, Kyle?
How are we doing today? It's a pleasure to be here. Episode 193. I was just sitting here thinking about when I asked Tanner that. I think we were driving in Issaquah probably about 3 years ago, and it was episode maybe 99.
Could be right. 100. Yeah, we knew this for a while. And I also failed to mention 2018 national champion baseball outfielder, left field DH for the Oregon State Beavers. I mean, how many people do you know have a World Series national championship ring? Let's go. Not very many. But I would say Kyle's one of my best friends, someone that I admire, someone that, you know, listeners, when have you ever think of a time in your life when you kind of met someone and you're like, yeah, that's my people. Like, we are so similar, same morals, same values, same, you know, drive to be great, care about people. Curious to get better, and we both have this passion for mindset. Kyle, maybe tell the listeners kind of your whole journey on growing up, going to Oregon State. Let's just start there.
Yeah, so grew up in the state of Washington, about 30 miles north of Seattle. Played all three sports as a kid. Just loved, you know, sports and athletics, and was drawn to not only the sports that I played, but just watching sports. And you know, baseball, basketball, football was the three sports that I played. And, you know, got into high school and really started to kind of play football, and just baseball, basketball kind of went on the back burner. And then, you know, I had maybe a chance to go play some football and baseball at a smaller school, Division II school, and decided to go play junior college baseball and kind of take that route. And so I went to Everett Community College for a year. My coach was his name is Levi Lacey. He's now the Four Corners area scout for the Texas Rangers, and played there for a year, and then played a summer team that Colin, you and I both have played for, Chaffee Baseball. And, you know, it was in that summer that, you know, things kind of started to really align. I had a year of college baseball under my belt. I put a lot of time and energy and specifically not only in the skill of baseball, but into the weight room, and, you know, had grown a lot in my process as a player and was kind of in the right spot at the right time around the right people. And, you know, that's kind of what recruiting is knowing those people. And it was Jim Stewart that knew Pat Casey and Michael Conforto, and some guys had just gotten drafted out of Oregon State. And, you know, they had started watching me play and hit a couple homers, and I remember Nate Yeske and Pat Bailey were both calling me, but they said, hey, we want you to come down on a visit to Oregon State. So my dad, my grandfather, and I, we drove down to Corvallis and, you know, checked out the campus. And Pat Casey said, hey, you know, nobody, we got no scholarship money. We need an outfielder, and we want you. And in that room, no hesitation. I didn't know any of the finances, how any of it was going to go down. I just said, hey, I'm coming, you know, because 11 years old, 12 years old, I was watching the Beavers win, you know, back-to-back national championships. And, you know, that was something that I had seen in my mind prior, you know, as a kid, and, you know, started to kind of break some of the self-limitations maybe that I had on my own self, and, you know, committed to go play ball at Oregon State. And, you know, went down there and worked my butt off, met some of the most incredible people I've been around, you know, work ethic and just drive and determination. And so I was very grateful and blessed to be a part of that. And then, you know, fast forward probably 4 years after that, here we are sitting in Husky softball, baby. And we're coaching the Huskies, working with Coach Tarr and Coach Glass and Coach Jeffries. And, you know, it's just ever since that decision has been made, it's kind of set me on my path.
Tell us the story about how when you messed your knee up.
Yeah,
it didn't look good. And that's early on, and how Oregon State, you guys were a little different, built different. and you use like mindfulness and some mindset work. So that was a huge tool for you and your whole team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had a whole culture of people, you know, that were bought into it. You know, it was 2017. I was just entering into my junior year, and we had a facility called like an indoor, like the Dempsey Center. And I was in a practice and I kept running and my knee was hurting really bad. So I didn't really, I couldn't run. My knee was jacked and I went to the doctors and doc, you know, we did some stuff and MRI, Dr. Aukerman was a great human being, but I had these MRIs done and, you know, it's 2017. We're predicted number one team in the country, win the national championship that year. You know, I'd met with a lot of professional baseball teams, had a chance to get drafted that year. And, you know, I decided to have a knee surgery because I went home for break. I was like, I'll rest for 30 days. I come back. It was the same thing. Like I was just still hurting. So I'm like, something isn't right. So when I had that knee surgery, I sat out that whole season, probably one of the harder points in my life, which is, I guess, a good thing, right? If that's the hardest thing I was enduring at the time. But, yeah, I came back in 2018 after a year. We lost to LSU in the semifinal. They went on to the national championship to play Florida, and I believe Florida won that national championship. But, yeah, I got back in 2018 and played the first 2 weeks of the season. I was pretty strong. I felt really good. We were playing Ohio State, had a really good game, get back to the hotel, similar deal. My right leg started locking up, same thing with my knee. So it's now my other leg. And it was kind of like a deja vu moment. And I was pretty emotional about it. We get back to Corvallis. This is like a year later and same deal. Had a couple, a little similar deal, but a little different actually. I just had some pieces break off and stick in the knee joint. So doc was like, hey, if we want to be 100% by the end of the season, like let's do a surgery. So I had a knee surgery in the middle of that season. And then, you know, that 2 weeks in specific was spent, I mean, every day what we were doing was a lot of visualization, mindfulness work, but really hammered it down, came out of those 2 weeks, and I played 2 weeks off surgery and played the rest of the season, and yeah.
But wasn't it a type of deal where they said like 4 to 6 weeks, and you're like, no, I'm going to be back in 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was exactly
And while you would train, rehab it physically, you spent time mentally visualizing healing, seeing yourself being stronger, right?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of concrete willpower. You know, when Doc told me in the doctor's office, I'll never forget just sitting there in the office and he's like, hey, you know, this is going to put you out maybe 4 to 6 weeks. And I said, no, Doc, I'm gonna play in two. You know, the Huskies are coming to town in 2 weeks and I'm going to play in that game. And that Friday night game got rained out. Saturday played a doubleheader, took batting practice. And, you know, I was walking off the field in the office and I walked into Pat Casey's office and said, hey, man, like, I want to play. Like, put me in the game tonight. He DH'd me. And, you know, I hadn't done anything in 2 weeks and I played arguably the best game of my life. But, you know, mentally, that was a big piece, you know, being able to just decide that I was going to do that. And, you know, there's a balance of being stupid and what is feasible. But the surgery I was having wasn't an ACL repair or something that was completely out of the ordinary. It was, you know, a microscope cleanup, but it still took some guts and some willpower. But, you know, I knew that that season was important for us. And, you know, it was important that we were going to win the national championship. That's what the culture was. Every day we worked to align our habits with what our goals were.
That's good. Well, maybe tell us what it was like. What's it take to win a national championship? What was it like that season?
Yeah, you know, Pat obviously is one of the greatest coaches of this generation and in the game of baseball. And, you know, he would almost have these like storybook moments when he would talk to the team or he'd be around the team. You know, we watched movies like Miracle or, you know, Remember the Titans. And it was a real life movie of Pat Casey. He was that kind of person, but he would sit there and, you know, he'd say, how do teams win championships? And he would ask us that question and he'd proceed to, you know, tell us, hey, every team lifts, every team trains, every team's going to hit in the cage. You know, every team's going to take ground balls. They're going to do everything that we're doing. But how does a team win it? And his answer was always, you go beyond what effort is. And you find another barrier of what effort is. And we defined what that was by how we worked and the habits that we did every day. You know, we lifted 4 days a week, and we would lift at 6 a.m. guys rolling in, we're in the weight room at 5:30, rolling out on the track. And it was an every day deal. And then you get out of that, you eat breakfast, you go straight into a morning hitting session. And, you know, everything was aligned to work at that level. And we did it long enough, consistently together as a unit. And, you know, we won the national championship. And, you know, it was because of how we worked and the people that were there. That's what made it, is the culture, those individuals that were in the locker room with us.
That's great. What's it like when you're done playing? How'd you adjust your self-image? Like, what was that like when you had finished? Not a lot of athletes have a lot of challenges there.
100%, you know, probably one of the harder points, you know, of life. You know, growing up, all the dream was it was rat or die to be a professional baseball player. And, you know, you kind of get to those crossroads and you start understanding the reality of things. You know, we can dream and have goals, no questions, and we should dream big. And, but at a certain point, there's got to be some sort of, you know, reality and understanding and wisdom that some things might not be exactly attainable. And that's what I got to, where I knew I wasn't 100% healthy. I knew I had to go through some things, you know, to get myself to that point. And, you know, I felt that God told me that it was my calling to coach. And, you know, it took me a minute to make that transition. And that was when I just had first met you, you know. And that was something that you had really helped me through. You know, when we're talking about mindset, mental performance, a lot of it is community. It's people. It's having an individual that you can connect with. That's the first step, you know, regardless of what the information that we know is, it's the connection. And that was the first piece when we connected in that white room, based by pros. I'll never forget you. You go, what's Nike stand for? I was like, I knew what it was. I was like, just do it. And I didn't know what Adidas was at the time. And you go, well, what's impossible is nothing. And then you're like, well, what do you stand for? And, you know, that was the first moment that I was like, well, I don't really know, you know, what I stand for. And so that process of really me figuring out who I was, you know, who I wanted to be, you know, and started creating that image of that. But, you know, that's a hard question, I think, Colin, because, you know, not just myself, but every athlete experiences those things. And, you know, when you go through it, there's really no roadmap or, you know, destination of how you get to who you are. You kind of have to make that up.
That's it. Well, let's talk about Alan Yeager.
Yeah.
What he did for your team at Oregon State and what instilled in you that you can train body, craft, mind. You had a few teachers like myself and Alan that has kind of helped you have a philosophy as a person, but as a coach.
Yeah. You know, 100%, you know, Alan has been, I talked to him last night, actually, for about 45 minutes on the phone, but you know, he's a great friend, just like you are. He's worked with a lot of athletes. I think he's taught this mental game and worked with athletes for about 30 years. But I first met Alan when we were playing in USC. He lives in Brentwood Hills and there in California. And, you know, I met him at USC, and that was the first time I'd really met somebody that was, you know, really specific in baseball, you know, in the mental side of baseball. And he was the first person I ever talked to that had removed a lot of drama or fluff or excess understanding of what the game was. It was so simple what he was saying. And, you know, he worked directly with our players and our team, and he saw us at USC. He came back when we were at UCLA. He flew up to Oregon State, worked with our squad, you know, had multiple phone calls with him. And, you know, now that I've become a coach, I've probably talked to him more than ever. I usually Zoom with him once a week, once every 2 weeks, check in with him. But, you know, Allen's biggest piece and what he talks about is there's a process of what's happening in the game, and then there's drama. So the process of hitting a ball as a hitter comes down to the simplicity of the hitter needs to see the ball and they need to hit the ball. If I'm a pitcher in the circle or on the mound, there's a sign that's being laid down. I need to execute that sign. I need to attack my target, attack my focal point, execute that. If I'm the fielder, I need to be aware of where I'm going with the ball, knowing, thinking the ball is being hit to me. That's the process that's happening. And then the process that's happening in the dugout is we're in tuned into the game. We're watching the game. So his teaching would be identify what the process is for the athlete and then identify, you know, when you're leaving that process and what he would call drama. And drama would be the variables. And the variables would be an ongoing laundry list of things. You know, in baseball, you have scouts, you have professional baseball, you know, but all of us have variables. You know, in softball, there's a lot of coaches that are watching, you know, these athletes perform, and that's a variable. You know, they could be going up to the plate thinking, oh, I want to hit this home run because I want to go to X school or whatever it is. You know, parents are a variable. You know, batting average, stats, statistics, that's a variable. You know, how my body feels, that's a variable. Maybe I'm guessing a pitch. Maybe I'm thinking something mechanical. Like, there's so many variables in this game. And so the simplicity of what Allen had taught myself and a lot of players that he's worked with over the 30 years is, what is your process that you're doing? Okay, as a hitter, I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to get in the box of unconscious. I'm going to see the ball, and I'm going to hit the ball. And if anything else comes into my mind, it's outside my process. And can I do that every single pitch? And you take it a step further, and you start talking about the mental game of, let's say, life. It's the same thing, right? You get in a car, and you're driving your car. What's the process of driving the car? Okay, you're going to turn the music on, and you're going to drive. If anything else comes in, it's outside the process. If you're sitting in class, you're listening to the professor speak, you're taking notes and you're listening to the professor. Anything else is outside the process. Phone buzzes, somebody's talking to me, somebody throws a piece of paper, whatever it may be, it's outside the process that I'm doing. And that is the mental discipline and the simplicity of it.
That's good. Maybe the last question, Allen, he gave you guys a script that you would – or other people on the team, that was all player led, that you guys would get to the field early and before batting practice, before warm up, before throwing, stretching, you would go to the mind gym.
Yeah.
Maybe break that down for us.
Yeah. So Allen would teach us, you know, why this is important, but more importantly, he taught us how to do it. And that is the mental practice. We would spend, these would last 15 to 20 minutes. We'd sit down in a room and we'd have a guy named Tyler Graham, who is the hitting coach for Michigan baseball right now. And he would lead us through these meditations and we'd sit there and we'd lay on the floor and he'd talk us through it. Three to five minutes. We'd just be aware of what was going on, good, bad, ugly, anything that was in our minds. We'd just be aware. Then we'd turn all of our attention and energy to the body. We'd start at the feet. We'd work from the feet to the head and back down. We try to get a sensation that we were floating in the air and that whatever was supporting us was doing all the work. And we transition into back to our breath and seeing numbers, visualizing numbers with our breath. So on an inhale, we would visualize ourselves drawing a number one. On the exhale, that would become a two. And we do this, we'd start 1 to 10, 1 to 20, 1 to 50. And so back to the process and drama. The number would be the process, and if the mind goes to anything else, that would be drama. It'd be catching that attention and energy, redirecting it back to the number. So you're practicing the out-of-practice practice for the in-game process with those numbers. That'd be about 12 minutes in. Once we got about 12 minutes in, we would go into deep, deep states of visualization, of first-person visualization. No outcomes, no nothing. It would be hitter in the box, visualizing lanes, balls coming into lanes, and just seeing the ball. Seeing the ball big, seeing the ball in our lane, and just tracking the pitch, not even swinging. Maybe getting to the point that you could feel like you're going to barrel it but using the sensation, the feeling of barreling it, because as a hitter, anybody that's locked in, they know that feeling of barreling a ball. There's arguably not a lot of greater feelings in the world. We'd visualize lanes on the pitching side. It'd be the same thing. You'd envision a ball coming out of your hand and hitting the target that you want. And even deeper, you get layers and layers deeper into the visualization. You would go black and white, where a ball would be white, glowing white, and it would be a beam of light coming to the zone. And that's deep, deep visualizations. But you would do everything prior to get your mind calm in a state that you could focus on the visualization. You'd visualize for 8 minutes, pitching-wise, hitting-wise. We'd take some deep breaths and come out of it. But it was what we were doing every day. You know, I remember a time in the national champ or in the College World Series when we were playing Washington. We had a 4-hour rain delay, and we went through two of these visualizations exercises in that 4-hour span. And we came out and scored about 12 runs and put our team on track to go win the national championship.
Can't just train the body, got to train the mind, Novi. I love that. That's great. Mm-hmm. But there was intention, there was design, and there was consistency. I think that's what I think people need to note on that experience. And it wasn't just let's do it once. It was like it was part of your guys' process.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing with training the mind, Colin, is it's like going to the gym. Like you go to the gym, you work out, you come home, you look in the mirror, like you want to get more jacked. It's the same thing with the mind. Like you're taking time breathing, maybe you're taking time visualizing, and you're like, is this working? Is this happening? But it's something last night that Alan said to me, and this is a word, ineffable, meaning the mental game is ineffable. It's something that is not explainable. It's something that needs to be felt. And that's the hard part about it, is you got to feel what it's like to really hone in on the breath and direct everything to the breath when you're in performance.
That's great. Well, let's talk about how you're probably one of the most detailed, knowledgeable, certified master your mindset coaches that I know. Hmm. No, outside of myself. Yeah, you've taught the content curriculum. You've taught the five pillars with athletes and student athletes and just people one-on-one. You've worked it with teams. Maybe help us understand that process for you, who was an athlete competitor, now a coach, and you can train your skills, how to hit, throw, field, catch, pitch, how to lift weights. But this gave you like aside from mindfulness, this gave you some language and it gave you some drills to train your mind. Maybe talk about that.
Yeah. You know, the process of learning this has been nonstop. You know, I think the transition from playing to coaching, the hard part was really being able to, you know, put it into words. And so when I met you and we started working through a lot of that curriculum, it allowed me, like you said, a language. It allowed me an avenue to be able to maybe communicate some of the things that I didn't really understand myself. So, you know, working through the five mental skills, the mental toolbox, I guess we could call it, self-awareness, self-talk, self-image, courage, and then being process focused, you know, using those handouts, using those worksheets was something that, you know, I had been searching for as an athlete and I never had it. And I think that's why it's something that I was so inspired by, is I truly wholeheartedly believed in it. And, you know, when we break down the root word of mindset, it's a conditioned set of beliefs that drive our behavior. And so the inspiration of, you know, where this first started was being able to provide people, a younger generation, with that conditioning at a younger age, because I didn't get to have that as an athlete. And, you know, it's important. And I think that it needs to be taught consistently. You know, it should be taught in schools. They should be teaching mindfulness. They should be teaching visualization. They should be, just like we train anything, we can train to hit, you can train to shoot a basketball, you can train your weights, your body, like you can do all those things. We can train ourselves to think better. But most people, we don't know what we don't know. And that's why people like you, Colin, are so important, because we're helping people understand what they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe when you were mentoring kids, then as a master mindset coach, when you, I guess, mentor kids now or put them through that program, what would you say the biggest need that you're seeing that the athletes have now?
Yeah. You know, I think just today with our generation of social media and the ever so growing just society is, you know, the communication aspects of things, you know, getting people to connect and talk to each other and, you know, communicate maybe in a way that is different than what normal society is conditioning us to do, you know, and that's get to talk about how they feel. And maybe they start to understand and realize that as athletes, we're all kind of similarly experiencing the same things. So, you know, the connection, the trust, that's the first piece, right? And then from there, it's getting to the root why of what's going on and making the athlete aware of what is going on in the mind, what is going on, you know, during the day, or what's our ants, what's our automatic negative thoughts, like what are those things that is happening in my mind in performance, and then building a plan with them to like, hey, if this is happening, then let's do this. And the mind gym is not just a one-time thing. It's an everyday, every second process, because the brain doesn't stop thinking. As you would say, we're designed to worry about something, and it's true. And the biggest piece, and I'm probably going off topic here, but is the problem isn't thinking. The problem is adding on more thoughts to the thinking. One thought turns into 5 thoughts or 10 thoughts. And the point is can we put our thoughts to sleep and focus on the breath, or focus on a mantra, or focus on a word? And it sounds weird, or it sounds like, oh, like, why would I do that? Well, we're conditioning ourselves to be able to control ourselves, control where our awareness goes. But working with athletes, it's getting them aware of what is going on. That's the hardest piece, getting them to connect with each other.
That's cool. Well, it was so fun. June of 2021, I come down to Bend, Oregon. Nobi's the head coach of the Bend Elks. And I feel like you've been in the lab, you know, what are your core values as a coach? What's your philosophy on how to run offense and defense, the mental game? And you were no longer in a lab. There were live bullets flying.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that time as a head coach, and then now being able to move from coaching baseball to softball. When you're in like a real world environment, when all these things are needed and you know the concepts, but teaching it and staying consistent with how you show up in when you have lost 3 games in a row.
Yeah.
When there's some drama amongst the team and either ownership or other coaches or fans, whatever you want to call it. What was that process like? And maybe what did you learn most about you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, again, the process of learning, it just has not stopped. You know, I've continued to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, I think the moment that we think we have everything figured out, like, that is not the right mindset to be conditioned. So, you know, that process of being a head coach, I think I was 25 years old at the time, you know, and a lot of those athletes were 21 years old or, you know, draft eligible athletes. You know, that was a challenge for sure. And just the biggest thing that I learned from that is the most important thing is your people, regardless of what you're doing, whether it's coaching, it's business, it's a relationship. People is the most important piece, and connecting with those people and how you do that. And to answer really the question of how did I deal with that, I continued to practice my own mind and have been in control of my own mind. And that has allowed me to help other people, because if my mind's clear, if my mind is consistent and I'm going to my own mind gym, then I can help other people. If I don't do that and I don't take care of myself, it's hard to help those other people. So to answer the question, the most important piece is people, but most importantly, taking care of my mind so I can be in control to help anybody.
That's good. Well, I'm thinking maybe got a few more questions. Thanks, Tommy, for taking time out of your day. And one of the questions I ask live audience or groups, you know, how important is mental fitness scale 1 to 10? Like, it's a 10. Well, question 2 is, from a time perspective, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much time do you invest in doing mindset work? People usually give a lower number because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So just give me some strategies on how we can train our mind. Give me some like tangible things that we can do.
Yeah. First thing I would say is in the morning, at night, before bed, sit down, like just sit in a comfortable chair, take your shoes off, put your feet on the ground, and just let your eyes close and just breathe. And just notice how good it feels to not worry about anything. And as you breathe and you inhale, count number one. And you exhale, count number two. And count 1 to 10. Start there, 1 to 10. And just notice how your mind scrambles. The monkey mind, it's all over the place. And that is the conditioning that we need to do every day, is just slow down. That's where I'd say to start. Okay, you do that, write some things down, come out of that, do that for 2 weeks and ask yourself, do I feel calmer? Do I feel more in control? Do I feel more aware? That's where I would start. And I think this is the hardest part about mindset. And there's a lot of people in our society today talking about this, but how do you train it is the hardest piece. It's an everyday thing, but it's breathing. Getting to the point that you're able to be aware of when something happens and redirect energy, redirecting. That's the process that's constantly happening because the brain is not stopping thinking. And are you aware of when you are going down the tangent out of a spiral into a negative thought that spirals into 10 negative things that then is going to affect everything about your body and your mind? Do you have the ability to catch it and bring it back to the breath? Because the breath is the present moment. The breath is now. That's where I would start. I would journal, write things down, do those things, write down whatever it is that you want to do. But you start there, you go 1 to 10, okay? Then you go 1 to 20, then you go 1 to 50. And you're going to see how hard that actually is.
So as we wrap up here, Nobi, doing a great job. I think we should do a Master Mindset lightning round.
A lightning round?
Yeah. When we're coaching and teaching together, I always put you on the spot. I put people in the audience on the spot. So okay. I'm going to put you on the spot, the hot seat, the safe seat. Kyle Novak, what's the number one source that influences confidence?
Self-talk.
It's great. What percent of human thoughts are negative?
80%.
How do you define fear?
How do I define fear? Well, it's no fear, not N-O, but K-N-O-W, knowing what it is, how to use it. How do you define fear? Ooh, I forgot this one.
Fear is a physical response to a mental threat. Yeah, how do we define mindfulness?
Ooh, a couple of different types of mindfulness. Single point mindfulness would be focusing energy on one thing, such as numbers, like I was saying, breath, and then open-ended mindfulness.
Mindfulness is a practice of self-awareness, to being present without judgment.
Yeah.
Maybe think of, let me give you one more. I can tell you. What's the number one driver that influences behavior?
Self-image.
Good job. I love it. And I love that you threw out the mindset. You defined it exactly right. Mindset is a conditioned set of beliefs that drive behavior. What's the mission of a Master Mindset?
It is to, I think I do know this. It is to influence people. That's one of them, I believe.
No.
I don't know. You have to tell me.
To transform lives and normalize mindset training. Okay, yeah, maybe last question. T-Money, you got one?
How would you define leadership in one word?
Influence.
What is influence?
When you're no longer here, what did you leave on somebody, on something?
I would say influence is value.
Value.
Maybe last question. What are the core values of Master Mindset?
Ooh. Awareness? No, ASA. Oh, yeah, being a G. Give, gratitude, and growth.
What are they?
Give, gratitude, and growth.
That's it. T-Money, you have one last question before we wrap up?
I think we covered it, honestly. Nobody's knowledgeable when it comes to master mindset.
I mean, you probably are like the number one, I mean, in terms of like knowledgeable person on the concept. So no, but I love you, man. I love you so much. I'm so proud of you. Like, how many people go from, you know, high level baseball coaching to being hitting coach to one of the best college programs, softball, in the entire nation? Yeah. And you're so open, growth mindset, humble. No one outworks you. Huge heart, and I see you as a brother. So I just love you a ton, and so I'm so proud of you. I'm gonna keep cheering you on. Where can folks find you?
Oh, I'm in Seattle, Washington, in the batting cage, getting after it.
What do you have a handle? What's your Instagram? What's your Twitter?
My social media game needs to get better. I'm either in the batting cage or I'm on the phone recruiting. What's my social media? I'm at Kyle_Novak28.
That's great. Twitter. And maybe we're going to send this to a lot of high school softball players. Why should they come to UW?
Well, you get a chance to come play for Coach Tar. You get a chance to play in the national championship, compete for a national championship. Not to mention you get to go to one of the best schools in the country academically, in the University of Washington. So, and mighty are the women. We got a great program here. We got great leaders. We got great people. We got Tanner Pierce's little brother in here, just getting after it for us, which is pretty
little
awesome.
Little brother, let's go. Team Money, that's right.
Little brother.
Well, cool. Hey, well, Kyle, man, the Pierce probably the best famous ever. But we got to jump, man. But Kyle Novak, Team Money, help me out. Finish this sentence, this truth. The body has limits.
But the mind.
But the mind is limitless.
There you go. That's right. Peace.
Let's go.
See you guys.